This is the HVAC School Podcast, and it's known as the podcast that helps you remember some things you might have forgotten along the way, as well as helps you remember some things you might have forgotten in the first place. At least that's what my friends tell me. I'm Brian, and this short episode is going to be about capacitors, what actually causes them to fail. And I've talked about this a lot. I know that I've made a video about this, but some of you still aren't getting it, so I'm going to try it again. Our sponsors are Refrigeration Technologies at RefrigeTech.com. Love those guys. They make some of the best chemicals out in the marketplace today. If your current supply houses do not have Refrigeration Technologies products, such as Nylog or Viper Cleaner or the Pan and Drain Treatment Spray, then you need to ask them to bring it in because it's good stuff. You're going to like it. Give it a shot. You can also get it from True Tech Tools if you'd like. TRUTechTools.com. Use the offer code GETSCHOOLED. Also, I need to thank Fieldpiece, fieldpiece.com, another great SoCal company, Southern California company, just like Refrigeration Technologies. They make some of the best test equipment out there. So multimeters and gauges and probes and all that sort of stuff they make. Really good products, manometers, so on and so forth. If you haven't tried the new S-Mans, the new S-Man 380 and 480, it's the new S-Mans, not the older ones. I will confess, I wasn't a loyalist to the old ones, but the new ones are really nice. They are dope AF, which means dope and fantastic. I think that's what the kids mean when they say that today. They're great products. You're really going to love them. They connect with MeasureQuick, which makes them very unique. They also work with their own wireless temperature probe. So if you don't want to use wires, you don't have to use wires. You can also use them in conjunction with the entire JobLink kit from Fieldpiece without any additional gadgetry. You just get the tools, use them with MeasureQuick. They work great. Try them out. You can find them at TrueTechTools.com, TRUTechTools.com. Use the offer code GETSCHOOLED or buy them from your local distributor. And finally, I need to thank Speed Clean. Speed Clean has been a longtime partner. We've recently come out with a new condenser coil cleaning guide, which you can find by going to their website, speedclean.com. We also have the ductless cleaning guide as well that are really just kind of soup to nuts look at the benefits of cleaning condensers, some of the procedures, best practices. Great thing for you to share with your technicians or the new apprentice in your life to show them the importance of cleaning. Because frankly, a lot of what we do comes down to cleaning and good maintenance practices. So there you have it. Thank you to our sponsors. All right, I'm going to talk more about capacitors. So capacitors, what causes them to fail? I'm going to start here. So that way, those of you who have short attention spans can move on. What causes them to fail is temperature and overvoltage. Over temperature and overvoltage are what cause capacitors to fail, and just poor manufacturing practices. So, I mean, that's a big reason why they fail now more than they used to, is that they just don't make them like they used to, as we say down here in the South. So that's a big reason why, but it is over temperature and over voltage. But in order to explain that and why I'm saying that, let me just reiterate what a capacitor does. A capacitor creates a phase shift. Everybody's heard that, creates a phase shift. And just think of it this way. Really, induction motors were designed to work on three-phase electricity. And so I always use the example, spinning a pinwheel by slapping it on the sides is not the easiest way to spin a pinwheel. It's better if you're kind of hitting it at an angle in order to get it to spin. That's just a kind of a simple way of thinking about it. And when you have three hands that are all kind of hitting it in sequence, three separate phases, 120 degrees out of phase, like three phase, then it works great. You don't need a capacitor. But when you only have two and the forces are directly against each other, 180 degree phase difference, you're going to have trouble spinning the motor. So you add in that capacitor in order to create a phase shift, in order to get the motor running and keep it running with the proper torque and in the right direction, so on and so forth. You've all noticed this. If you have a compressor, a high torque motor that has a failed capacitor, the thing won't start, right? We're talking run capacitor here. If you have a fan motor, like a condenser fan motor that is low torque, the fan may start. It may start backwards, may start forwards and run slowly and then stop. It varies. But you need that capacitor to get it running in the right direction with torque. And again, I'm talking about run capacitors here. Start capacitors are basically just run capacitors on steroids that are taken out of the circuit. But run capacitors stay in the circuit all the time, and they work with typically what we call PSC motors, permanent split capacitor motors. They're always in the circuit. So that capacitor, that run capacitor, is actually in the start circuit. That's the other thing that confuses people. You have your run winding and you have your start winding. A motor only has two windings, and it has three terminals, two windings. Common is in between start and run. Your run is connected across the line, so to the other leg of power, and your start winding is connected to the capacitor. And all the capacitor does in order to create a phase shift is it stores and discharges every time there's a cycle change. So it's kind of like a battery, but it's a battery that stores and discharges really, really quick. So it's doing it 60 times per second. If you have 60 hertz, it's charging and discharging, back and forth. And so because of that time shift of the charge and discharge, it's creating a lag. It's creating a phase shift. And that phase shift is what gets that motor running in the right direction. But from a very basic standpoint, because the start winding is connected to that capacitor, the amount of current that can run through that start winding is dictated by the size of the capacitor in microfarads, the charge that it can hold, and then also by the voltage. So the higher the voltage, the more that it can store from a current standpoint, and then also by the frequency. So those are the three factors that impact how much charge a capacitor can hold. But from a very practical standpoint, when you measure amps on just the start winding, which you almost never do because we're generally measuring amps on common, but do it sometime, measure amps just on the start winding, you're going to notice the start winding amps are lower than run winding amps. And also the start winding itself is a higher resistance than the run winding. So you don't have as much current moving through the start winding, but that's dictated by how much current can move into the capacitor. In other words, your capacitor is your limiting factor. Whereas on your run winding, your limiting factor is just the resistance in the run winding, right? And so as that motor gets up to speed, you have more inductive reactance, to be really fancy. You have more impedance, more resistance in that run winding as that motor gets up to speed. And that's what controls that amperage. So when you start up a motor, that amperage is really high because the resistance is low in that winding. And then as it gets up and running, that resistance increases. There's some of you who are going to hear what I'm saying, and I'm saying it fast because this isn't really what we're talking about here. You're going to hear what I just said there and you're going to think I said it wrong. Go back to Ohm's Law and Watt's Law if you have questions about this, because it is counterintuitive somewhat. But just know that as a motor starts running, the resistance of the run winding increases, and that's what causes the amperage to decrease. As resistance increases, amperage decreases. But in the start winding, the capacitor is the limiting factor for the amount of current that can run through that circuit, because that circuit, that start winding, can only move as much through it as that capacitor can hold every time the cycle changes. And so this is why if you take a motor and you put too big of a capacitor on it, too big of a run capacitor, and you measure the amperage on the start winding, you'll notice that the start winding amperage goes up. If you put too small of a capacitor on the start winding, you'll notice that current goes down. And if you put no capacitor in it at all, you disconnect the start winding from the capacitor, you'll notice there's no current at all on the start winding because now it's an open circuit, right? Which is what happens when a run capacitor fails. So when a run capacitor fails, you have no current on the start winding. I'll say that again. When the run capacitor fails, you have no current on the start winding. Now, here's the misconception. A lot of people believe that there's something that the motor can do that causes the capacitor to fail. So people will say, they'll find that it has a bad capacitor. And they'll say, well, the motor's failing, and that's what caused the capacitor to fail, so I need to change the motor as well. Incorrect. The capacitor failed, which now has hurt the motor. That's what actually happens. Because when a capacitor fails, what happens? That thing draws locked rotor amps for a longer period of time, maybe going in and out on locked rotor, may have been running with it weak and overheating. So failing capacitors or failed capacitors are bad for motors. Failing capacitors are bad for motors, not the other way around. Failing motors are not bad for capacitors because that capacitor can only store and discharge the amount of current that it can store and discharge. That's it. You can't force it to store and discharge less or more other than a change in the voltage. And that change in voltage only occurs because of back electromotive force. So if you measure across a capacitor and you notice that it is higher voltage than what you see across the line, so say it's a 240 volt condenser and you measure across the capacitor and you have 320 volts, for example. That 320 volts is generated by the motor as it runs up to speed, because that motor, when it's running, yes, it's acting as a motor, but it's also acting as a generator too. And that's why you get that additional back EMF that's produced by the motor. And so could it be possible for a motor to create too much back EMF that could damage a capacitor in some way? I can't think of a way. You'd have to have a motor that was running faster than it was supposed to. And how on earth could it do that? The motor's speed is limited by the 60 hertz. So I don't see that as a possibility. Now, it is possible that somebody could have put a 370 volt capacitor in place of, in a situation where it should have had a 440. And that could cause it to fail, certainly, because that capacitor is rated for a particular peak voltage. That's what that is. So if you put in a 440 volt capacitor, which I suggest only keeping 440 volt capacitors on your trucks because they're better made capacitors, so it can handle more voltage. So there's a possibility somebody could have replaced a 440 with a 370 and that could cause it to fail. But again, that's not a fault in the motor that caused the capacitor to fail. What causes capacitors to fail is two things. Two external things cause capacitors to fail, and that is when they overheat, so they're running hotter than they should be. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they're even running hotter than the rating. It just means that they're running hotter longer. So to think of it this way, the hotter a capacitor runs, the shorter its life will be. Think of it that way. The hotter a capacitor runs, the shorter its life will be, and it will hit a point where it will almost instantaneously fail if it gets hot enough. There's a rating on that capacitor that tells you what that temperature is in Celsius. That's a factor. So if it's running hotter, the capacitor will fail quicker. And if it's exposed to higher voltages, it will also fail quicker. So the higher the voltage that's applied to it and the higher the temperature that's applied to it, the shorter the life will be. And you see this. You have crazy amounts of failures in really hot climates. Florida, Arizona, the hot parts of California, you have a lot of capacitor failure. Go into applications up north, northeast, wherever, where they're not running as long in hot conditions. And they'll say, well, wait, we have hot days too. Yes, you do, but not for nearly as long because it's a function of how hot are they for how long of a period of time. And then also places like Florida have more capacitor failure in general because we have more lightning strikes. So we have more power surges. Not necessarily, we're not talking about direct strikes here, but we have high voltage events. And those high voltage events, they weaken the capacitor and sometimes they can cause them to instantaneously fail. So the two reasons why capacitors fail is because they run hot or because they have over voltage. But really, mostly, the reason why we're seeing so many more failures than we used to, and we know this, anybody who's worked in these markets know these things are failing more than they used to, is that they're just not made as well. And it comes down to foil and oil. A capacitor is a very simple device. It has a thin sheet of a plastic-like material with a metallic coating applied on both sides. And so that's what stores the charge because you have a difference in voltage across those plates. And so a charge is stored. Well, if the foil isn't thick enough, so that coating that they apply, the metal isn't very thick, it'll start to crack up as it overheats or has over voltage. And that's what you see when you see weak capacitors is those plates, which are really not plates the way we think of plates. They're just sheets with metal on them. That metal starts to crack. And that's where we see weak capacitors. And we see it all the time nowadays. The other factor is the oil that they put in the capacitor. So the oil is supposed to dissipate the heat. The type of oil is going to dissipate heat better or worse, and the amount of oil. And so it comes down to oil and foil. If you look at old capacitors, run capacitors, they were enormous compared to the size of capacitors today. So the foil was thicker and they had more oil. Because they had more foil and oil, they were over-engineered, they could handle much tougher situations over their life. As you try to make things cheaper, you try to stretch the specs. So there's a couple specs out there, I'm not going to bore you with what they are, but one of them was made by Tecumseh that basically said, here's how long a capacitor should last, at what temperatures, and here's where it should fail, so on and so forth. And so as they've gone on, rather than over-engineering them, they've started to try to squeeze as much money basically out of it as they can, and so they don't make them as well as they used to. Quite literally, they're trying to get right to the spec. Well, what happens when you try to get right to the spec? Sometimes you have some manufacturing variables that cause some not to be to spec, and so some of the capacitors that we're seeing are certainly, almost certainly not to spec, the ones that are failing so quickly. And so people have caught on to this, and now there's more and more American-made capacitors coming out, and you're seeing more of a focus on quality again. A company, Amrad, out of North Florida, they're making good quality capacitors there, and there's other companies as well that are doing the same, and it comes down to foil and oil. Thickness of foil, amount of oil, size of the capacitor, that's what really matters. Now, are there things you can do to make a capacitor run cooler? Absolutely. Doing things like using a metal strap when you mount it versus a plastic strap, that can help a little bit. I mean, people have mentioned this, and any little bit helps, right, to help dissipate that heat. Making sure that you position it. A lot of them are supposed to be positioned upright. They'll say that on them if they are. If they are, then I suggest positioning them upright. And the reason is that often those capacitors aren't completely full of oil. And when you keep them upright with the terminals up, that little gap of oil is going to be at the terminals where there isn't any plates. Whereas if you flip them upside down, a portion of that bottom section isn't going to have oil in it. So the heat dissipation isn't going to be as good at the bottom part of the plates. I mean, these are things that I hear people say. Who knows what I haven't done like scientific testing. But in general, you mount them with the terminals up. That will help. Mount them with a metal strap. And then try to prevent the unit from overheating. Because a lot of people say, after you have a dirty condenser coil, they see capacitors fail. Well, that stands to reason because it's not that the compressor's working hard and that caused the capacitor to fail because that's not how it works. But when you have a dirty condenser, that entire condenser gets really hot. So dirty condenser equals hot condenser equals a lot of higher temperature environment that capacitor's in. And so it stands to reason that those capacitors fail. As you start to notice this, you're going to notice By golly, it's true. You get more capacitor failures when they're hot. When you have condensers that are in full sun versus condensers that are in shade, you're going to tend to have more capacitor failures. So on and so on and so forth. Capacitors that are in freezers that are in unconditioned spaces are going to fail quicker than ones that are in conditioned kitchens. You're just going to start to notice this. And so if you want to reduce capacitor failure, you want to keep them cooler and then protect the system with a good quality surge protector that's going to help keep those overvoltage events from happening as well. And that's going to help extend the life. Undervoltage does not cause capacitors to fail. Motors having problems do not cause capacitors to fail. What causes capacitors to fail is over temperature, over voltage, and under engineering, under design, trying to meet the spec rather than trying to exceed the spec the way that they used to be made. And there's also some different oils and things that have changed over time because of environmental regulations. So there's a lot of factors to these things. And I'm not blaming anybody necessarily, but it is something as a technician to be aware of so you don't put your foot in your mouth. I've heard a lot of technicians say silly things like the compressor and motor took the capacitor out when actually it's the opposite. The capacitor failing took the motor out. And that's why capacitor testing is something that I really advocate for, especially in markets where they fail a lot, because a capacitor that's 20, 30% weak can easily increase the temperature and decrease the efficiency of that motor to the extent that you reduce the motor's life, which is why having the right size capacitor in is so important in testing them. We don't start suggesting to replace them until they're 10% outside of a specification, and they will be low. Capacitors don't fail with more capacitance, they fail with less. Somebody sent me an article recently, I think it was Jim Bergman, that showed that there is some circumstances under which a capacitor could increase in capacitance if it became moisture contaminated or something, but that's a complete outlier. And I think that's more electrolytic capacitors than it is oil fill run capacitors, which is what we have in air conditioning. So they're going to fail weak. If you have a capacitor that says 35 on it and you're testing it under load and it's saying 45 or something, you might want to retest, because the odds are that you're just measuring it wrong. It's a capacitor is not going to fail with more capacitance. It's going to fail with less. All right. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time on the HVAC School Podcast.